All right, so as a fourth and final presentation, I'll be discussing the PMA 2020 project in DRC. And as I'm obligated to say, I have no financial conflict of interest for this research. So the history of this project traces back to the 2012 London Summit, when a significant commitment of resources was made for achieving a really ambitious goal of 120 million new contraceptive users in 69 low incomes by the year 2020. So given the scope and size of this ambitious aim, there was a need to monitor and track changes in contraceptive use over time for these countries. So this is where PMA 2020 comes in, and the goal of the overall PMA 2020 project is to monitor changes in contraceptive use, prevalence, and related indicators over time for a range of countries. And specifically, I'll be talking about PMA 2020 in DRC, where the goal has been to collect a representative sample of women in the city of Kinshasa, age 15 to 49, and then measure these outcomes for these women in terms of modern contraceptive use and related indicators. So data for this project was collected by Kinshasa School of Public Health, of course, with Tulane School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine. There are two innovations to this project that I'd like to highlight, even though they've been discussed somewhat previously in these other presentations. The first is the use of MADS technology, where data collection, as was described, is done by cell phone. And, you know, as someone who's been working in data collection in sub-Saharan Africa for about 15 years, this project has been a revelation for me. So no more paper and pencil forms, no more, you know, checking questionnaires in the field. The data comes almost instantly to the server, and then I download it for almost immediate point-of-time analysis. So it reduces cost, reduces logistical concerns, I think improves data quality for a number of reasons. So, you know, it's great that I think we're able to achieve this in Kinshasa, and I'm sure it's going to spread elsewhere within DRC and other parts of the region. The second innovation is using resident enumerators for data collection instead of interviewers. So one of the goals of the project to achieve sustainability was to train a set of individuals who lived in each enumeration area to collect data for that enumeration area. So there's a number of advantages here. The first is better access to people in the community. The second, well, I think there's reasons to think that it would lead to better data quality, although one might argue that for some data collection efforts, this might, in fact, the effect on data quality might be questionable. But for this here, I think this led to actually improved data quality for a number of reasons that I'll discuss shortly. So in terms of the study design, how do you collect data for a city of 10 million people? Well, fairly simple. We did a two-stage cluster sample, where first we obtained a list of all enumeration areas within the city of Kinshasa from the National Statistical Bureau in the city. Then we randomly sampled 60 enumeration areas within the city of Kinshasa out of a total of, I think, over 300. And we sampled population proportionate to size. Then we went to these 60 enumeration areas and first did a listing of all households within the enumeration area. And then afterwards implemented a series of surveys, the first being a household survey, which collected various household characteristics like water access use, number of people in the household, and characteristics of those residents. Afterwards, we implemented the female survey that included the key questions about contraceptive use and other related indicators. Finally, a service delivery survey that was described previously by my colleagues here. And then the data, of course, includes not only survey data, but also GPS information for all households and service delivery points to achieve the wonderful and beautiful maps that Julie Hernandez showed earlier. So far, we've had two data collection efforts. The first round for PMA 2020 took place between August 2013 and January 2014. It was followed by a second round that actually just finished in September a couple months ago. And the design was somewhat similar, as I described, but it was different in one important aspect between the two rounds, where in the first round we used interviewers and that were trained by the School of Public Health and had worked on with the school and other projects, but did not reside in these enumeration areas. It wasn't until the second round that we actually used the resident enumerators approach for data collection. So that led to some interesting differences that I'll show in just a second. And then, as I mentioned, the data collection was done by a cell phone using an Alcatel MPOP model and sent to a server at FormHub, which I later downloaded for analysis. So here are some sample characteristics for, here we have round one and round two. And we see that the number of households and the number of women increased significantly across waves. The refusals were about the same. There's a slight increase in refusals in round two, but both were fairly low for both waves. The number, about half of the women in the sample were married, and that number remained roughly consistent for round one and round two. Unmarried sexually active was between 10% and 13%. So the most interesting differences here are, of course, the number of households and women that were found. Now, we're still looking at the reason why we found more women in round two, but I think that given that we used a different survey approach for round two, and that there's reason to think the resident enumerators had better access to these households, I think it's likely that we were able to find more women based on just this easier access on the part of the resident enumerators. But we're looking at, in future research, the effect of this differences in survey approach on the sample characteristics. Now turning to some results for contraceptive use for the sample. Here we have graphs for the overall contraceptive prevalence rate, the CPR here, modern use in the middle, and then CPR for traditional methods here on the far right. And this shows trends for five surveys that have taken place only in Kinshasa since 2007. So we start with DHS in 2007, the UNICEF mixed survey in 2010, DHS most recently, which conducted its second ever survey in DRC in 2013-2014, and then the last two bars represent PMA rounds one and round two. So the two results to highlight here, first of all, we see that there's a, you know, we're optimistic that there is a trend of increasing modern contraceptive prevalence, where we see that starting from 14% in DHS in 2007, in the most recent PMA, we see an increase to 22% modern contraceptive prevalence rate. Simultaneously, we see a decrease in traditional use over time, and that seems to explain most of the overall decrease in contraceptive prevalence during this period. Now, of course, the one thing that sticks out in this graph is the mixed survey, which is kind of like the sore thumb here, and I'm not exactly sure what's happening, but in the future we're going to look a little bit more closely at each of these surveys to find out what might explain some of the differences and to get a better sense of what's causing these trends. But we're optimistic and we're happy to see that modern contraceptive prevalence is increasing. Next, just focusing on two rounds of the PMA 2020 data, here we have rounds one and round two for married women and unmarried sexually active women. This is the method mix for some of the most prominent contraceptive methods across these two waves. So here we see that while contraceptive methods like male condom and withdrawal seem to be decreasing for both married women and unmarried sexually active women, one notable increase is the substantial increase in implants over time for round one and round two for both married and unmarried sexually active women. And if you remember back to the presentation that Sally gave, you might remember that the increased access of implants was evident between the two rounds of the service delivery survey there. So the increased use reflects that increase in access fairly well. Next, moving on to unmet need. First, we have unmet need for, again, round one and round two. The total unmet need was substantial in this population, where over 30% reported unmet need for either spacing or limiting. Of course, unmet need for spacing is higher at about 22 to 24% across waves, and limiting remains roughly consistent across waves at around just over 8% for round one and round two. And then below this, we have a graph of unmet need by wealth quintile. And we see that while there seems to be something sort of quirky going on with the round one data, represented here in the dark green bars, where we see that there's relatively high unmet need for the highest wealth quintile, for the second round, we see something that's slightly more expected, where unmet need declines for each wealth quintile as you get go from the lowest wealth quintile to the highest. Finally, some fertility indicators. Here we compare the most recent DHS with PMA round one and round two. We see that the total fertility rate in Kinshasa is, of course, not surprisingly, significantly less than it is for the rest of the country, and it's around between 4 and 4.3 total fertility rate. Adolescent birth rate is roughly between 57 and 62, and the percentage of births that are unintended, most recent births unintended, is about 50% for women, which is a strikingly high figure, again, reflecting this unmet need. And substantial percentages wanted later or wanted no more children, referring to the most recent birth. One other point about this table is we're again happy to see that there's a fair amount of consistency in our data compared to the Kinshasa DHS data. Okay, and then next steps for PMA 2020 and DRC, we're planning two more rounds of data collection in Kinshasa in 2015 using roughly the same survey methods and using these resident enumerators. But for the second round in 2015, which will be the fourth round overall, we're hoping to expand to be representative of an entire province in DRC. And I think we've narrowed it down to either Bakongo, which is in the far west of DRC, or Katanga, which is the southern region where there's a fair amount of mining activity that borders on Zambia. So we're in the process of making this decision, and we're optimistic that funding will be available to expand to be representative of a province. And then also, there are important questions about, well, why are these things changing that we hope to answer through some qualitative research. So we're planning focus group discussions on barriers to modern contraceptive use and perceptions to family planning service that I hope will answer some of the questions that we have here raised by some of the initial numbers for PMA 2020, as well as the service delivery surveys that were shown previously. So thank you very much.
Before I open it up for questions, let me just wrap this up by saying that we started this in 2011 with what was the black box of family planning in Kinshasa, and we currently have probably one of the best information platforms for being able to design and carry out family planning services. We've got the service delivery, the access to contraception on one side, the PMA 2020, which on every 6 months allows us to track the progress we're making in real time, which is amazingly motivating to our partners. I mean, when the data came out that showed there had been an increase in that period of 6 months, that implants were now visibly, measurably higher and as part of the method mix, it really makes you feel something is happening. And we've been very fortunate that at the same time, the policy environment, which prior to 2012 was not particularly favorable in the DRC, the government of the DRC has recognized the importance of family planning, both for the demographic dividend and for the whole issue of women's health, and have been very supportive, which makes a big difference in terms of donors wanting to be able to get involved. So this combination of political will on one side and this very solid information base on the other portends well for DRC continuing to be in the spotlight for family planning in the coming years. So with that, I'd like to thank you for attending and open it up for any questions you might have. While you're thinking of a question, let me say that the 3/4 of the people in this room who are Tulane students have already analyzed these data in their different classes, so they're quite familiar with them at this point, I suspect. Dr. Buchans.
We have faith-based organizations supporting these facilities, and they offer family planning. We have these facilities. Mm-hmm. As I showed in that graph, there were only 5% of the structures that they expressed religious opposition as their reason for not offering family planning.
Perhaps I can just complement that answer by saying the missionaries have made an incredible contribution to health services in the DRC. It is true that it is a Christian country, Catholic, and the exact divide between Catholic and Protestant I'm not entirely sure of, but the Protestants have been particularly strong. So I think that's part of what you're seeing here. And the Catholics, even if they don't offer modern contraceptive methods, will either make referrals to other places that do and have generally tried not to stand in the way. It's been a very refreshing situation on that.
I'm curious if there's been any attention to what can a customer expect when they walk into your three-star. And is there any marketing that these clinics are three-stars in comparison to some of the other clinics?
Julie, you want to?
So that's what I want for Christmas, but that's what I want for Christmas in maybe 10 years, maybe earlier than that, depending on. So I always tell my students, and probably you know how on your smartphone you have a Yelp application, for example, that's going to tell you what restaurant's good around the point that you're in. Well, the long-term objective is to have an info system that is compatible with maybe not smartphones, but at least cell phones. So the idea would be to have a woman could send a text message to a dedicated number and receive information based on our, that's why we need up-to-date information as well, on our database, saying, well, the nearest facility that offers that contraceptive and going to have someone trained in family planning is located at this address. And that's where I hope this could be going technology-wise, but that's very much the end goal.
Is there also a focus on standardizing the services that you get so that sort of a patient would walk into something and know these are the array of services that I can get out of this facility?
So I'll jump in on that one and just emphasize how much in infancy family planning services are in the country. I wish we'd had more pictures of what it looked like on the inside of some of these. These are very, very basic services. So there are ongoing attempts to try to improve quality in what's a very basic service. So your first question was right on in terms of what does a woman actually get when she gets there. That's a bit of what our qualitative research is also going to take a look at. The other issue with standardizing is there are 10 different sources of support for these 395 services. So although they're all coming together to try to increase access, it's not like a country where the government is running all the services and can get everyone marching to the same tune. So that's in the future. But not, I think that we're taking things one step at a time, which is basically to just try to get the access there. Kinshasa has never had a major communication program for family planning, and that's another part of what our next 6 months entails, is to even get the word out that family planning's out there. So.
Thank you.